3, one should rely on the discourses of explicit meaning, not on the discourses of implicit meaning. Here we become just a little technical. Discourses translates the word sutras. That is to say, discourses delivered by the Buddha, discourses on the Dharma. It is these discourses, of course, which make up the greater part of what are called the Buddhist scriptures. These discourses are very numerous. They're traditionally said to comprise 84,000 Dharma skandhas, or groups, or categories of teachings. And not only are they very numerous, they're also very varied. They're varied in form. They're varied in content. They're also varied in other ways. In some cases, the meaning of the discourse, the meaning of the sutra, is quite obvious. In other cases, it's not so obvious. It requires interpretation. Let me give just two simple examples. Examples from the Dhammapada. Dhammapada verse 5 says, enmity does not cease by enmity at any time. It ceases only by non-enmity. This is sometimes translated, hatred never ceases by hatred, it ceases only by love. Now, is the meaning of the verse clear? Does it mean what it says? Is it quite obvious? Or does it require interpretation? Well, one would have thought not. One would have thought it didn't require interpretation. Would it be possible, for instance, to interpret the verse as meaning that enmity does cease by means of enmity? That hatred does cease by means of hatred? Would it be possible to interpret it as meaning that violence or war was justified? That there could be a war to end all wars? No, it would not be possible. The meaning of the verse is quite clear, quite obvious, quite unambiguous. It requires no interpretation. It means exactly what it says. Enmity does not cease by enmity at any time. It ceases only by non-enmity. But suppose we take another verse, also from the Dhammapada. Dhammapada verse 294 says, having killed mother and father, the Brahmana goes blameless. Now what about this verse? Is its meaning clear? Does it mean what it says? Does it require interpretation? Well, the meaning is clear enough, apparently, but it certainly does require interpretation. And the Buddha himself gives, in another place, the interpretation. He says that the mother is craving. The father is ignorance. They are called mother and father because they are the root of samsara, the root of conditioned existence. To cut this root is to put an end to samsara. That is why one who kills mother and father goes blameless. This is the interpretation. Thus, we have two kinds of sutras, two kinds of discourses, two kinds of sayings of the Buddha. Those that do not require any interpretation, and those that do require interpretation. Or, discourses of explicit meaning, as they're called, and discourses of implicit meaning. In Sanskrit, nitartha and neartha, or nitartha and anitartha. This is a very important distinction. It's important partly because of what follows from it. And what follows from it is the third great reliance. That is to say, that one should rely on the discourses of explicit meaning, not on the discourses of implicit meaning. Should rely on them because their meaning is clear, obvious, unambiguous. Their meaning requires no interpretation. Not only that, discourses of implicit meaning should be interpreted in accordance with discourses of explicit meaning. That is to say, interpretations which are given of them should not contradict the discourses of explicit meaning. Discourses of explicit meaning are the criterion. Interpretations can be as fanciful and as far-fetched as you like. You can bring out all sorts of strange, unexpected ideas from these sutras, these discourses of implicit meaning. This is perfectly legitimate, perfectly valid, but what is brought out must not contradict the discourses of explicit meaning. In this way, one relies on the discourses of explicit meaning, not on the discourses of implicit meaning. At this point, a question may arise. What about the discourses like those of the Vimalakirti Nirdesha itself, or rather, like certain passages in the Vimalakirti Nirdesha? Better to say, those that deal with all sorts of magical happenings, magical events, magical performances. How do they stand in relation to this third great reliance, this third criterion of the spiritual life? I'll make just 2 points here. First, the meaning of these passages in the Vimalakirti Nirdesha is not rational or scientific. It is poetic, imaginative, mythic. As such, it makes its own non-rational appeal. The distinction of explicit meaning and implicit meaning applies mainly to discourses of a more discursive nature. Consequently, it does not really apply to these passages of the Vimalakirti Nirdesha. But if these passages are, so to speak, interpreted, if they are translated, as it were, from the poetic to the rational mode of expression, then the rational expression must not contradict the discourses of explicit meaning.